Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the latest edition of the Derek Gervin's As Good As It Gets Basketball Podcast. This is Ricky Hampton speaking with you, columnist for the African-American Athlete and a host of the show here with Derek Gervin, former New Jersey Nets NBA player and longtime professional basketball player. Derek, how you doing?
Doing great, sir. How you doing tonight?
Doing fantastic, brother. Doing fantastic. A lot of stuff going on in the world of basketball and beyond that we're going to try to touch on this evening. a lot of your work. Kawhi, on his way to DeMar DeRozan, is on his way to. Derek, can you hear me?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, I was asking, what do you think of the big trade? DeMar DeRozan heading to San Antonio for Kawhi Leonard.
Well, I think it's a trade that could benefit both teams. Hopefully both guys go in with a positive attitude. I look at DeRozan as being kind of upset about the way the trade went down. And I can understand where he's coming from because if you were made promises, I understand it's a business. But when you develop relationships, and that means sometimes you develop relationships with the owners, the general managers, the coaches. So when you meet with them and they tell you that there aren't going to be any trades made as far as you're involved, and then you get traded, I kind of understand the guy being upset. It's business, but still, you take people at their word. I can understand him being upset. And as far as Kawhi, I hope he goes in with the right attitude. I think it's a good fit for Mr. Leonard. I haven't been a big Toronto fan, but they're one of the teams that's been right there in the East. And I think with Kawhi, if he goes in with the right expectations, the right mentality, that could be a team that could go very deep in the Eastern Conference. So I think it was a great trade for both teams.
Well, certainly with LeBron gone to L.A. now, the Eastern Conference is wide open. And you know, you talk about and everything. I think what a lot of people don't understand, a lot of these guys are family men. And, you know, you're trading, you got to make the decision to leave your family in the city they were, uproot your family and your children, and move them to an entirely different city. And again, that is part of the business, but that, you know, that's one of the difficult things about professional sports. You know, the constant movement that happens, the majority of players. You know, you got guys in the league. I think Anthony Tolliver, who played with the Pistons last year, I think Detroit may have been his 8th or 19th. And I know Anthony's a family man, and that's some tough stuff to do. Now, you're very well paid for all this, but nonetheless, you got a 7-year-old kid who loves going to his school. That's a problem.
Well, that's part of the business, and it is. It's not fair a lot of times, but you know, whoever said life was fair, we know how that goes. But it could be a lot worse opportunities because, like you said, the guys are well compensated. So when you get highly compensated, I mean, things are going to happen, and you just have to make the adjustments. I'm kind of stunned about the Kawhi situation myself. Because I understand Anthony Tolliver's situation, and then I look at the guys that are called superstars. It will be hard for me. I talked to my brother about this, and I'm looking at this Kawhi situation. He must know something that the rest of us don't know, because when you turn down a $219 million deal 5 years, that's $43.8 million a year. There's no guarantee you're ever going to make up that kind of money. So I'm still kind of baffled by that situation, and I'm more baffled because I'm here in San Antonio, and this has been like a different – this has been a different story with Kawhi. This is like a first in history for me in the sports world. The guy hasn't said 3 words, and that's very rare. And it's hard to criticize him because you don't know what's really on his mind. We don't know what kicked him off in San Antonio. There are a lot of unknowns. So for me, it was kind of baffling, but I have to say, if you're willing to pass up that kind of money, you must know something the rest of us don't know, and I hope things work out well for him in the end.
What is surprising to me about this whole thing, Derek, is San Antonio is number one, a great city, one of the great franchises of the National Basketball Association, with a great coach in Greg Popovich and a great tradition of championship basketball. I think what I'm saying, what's not to like about being there?
Well, it's sad because we're the seventh largest city in the United States, but it's not really known as a media market. What I've heard recently, I heard a little grumbling, little rumblings under the table about Kawhi was unhappy starting with the 2016 All-Star game. Supposedly Russell Westbrook was riding around, and this sounds so petty to me, but this is what I heard. And I don't know how true it is, but I think it does have some substance. It carries some weight. Kawhi saw how the stars were treated, the superstars were treated at the All-Star event. And Westbrook was supposedly riding around in a vehicle, a really nice vehicle, and he was being chauffeured around. And it wasn't a vehicle that was purchased through the NBA. So Kawhi, I think, he's a superstar. And he wants to start getting the treatment that some of these other guys were getting, the Kevin Durants and the Steph Currys. And I feel he's somewhat feels like he's been slighted. So sometimes you want to make a change and do what's best for your brand. And I feel at this time that's what he's all about right now is his building his brand. And then I don't see that happening in Toronto, but hopefully he'll be patient for a year. And I'm hoping things go his way as far as next year with the Lakers, but there's no guarantee.
No, none at all. So you already got him in L.A. next year.
Well, that's the plan. Now, the plan is his plan was the Lakers. But I believe that's changed with LeBron going to the Lakers. I don't see Kawhi as being the second fiddle guy, Scottie Pippen. I don't see him as being that kind of guy. What I see happening right now is him possibly, it looks like the L.A. Clippers. Now, I don't know how that's going to work out because they would probably have to deal my guy. And you know my guy is Tobias Harris. So I don't know what that's going to take to make it happen. But, yes, I really believe, I say 95% next year he ends up in L.A. And I say the Clippers, not the Lakers.
Oh, okay. And you know, Tobias just turned down a lot of money in L.A. They offered him a big deal. And, I'm going to pass on this. I think it was $80 million or so. That,
Clippers million, yes.
Was it $80 million that they offered him? And I tell you, I'm a
Go
big
ahead.
Fan of Tobias Harris too. Derek, he is. He was here in Detroit for a year and a half, and he was a terrific player. He was their best player when he was here, and I say that even with the emergence of Andre Drummond, I still thought that this kid was their best player. And I hated to see him get traded away, even though they got Blake Griffin in return, because I just think he has at that point, he's going to have a longer stay in the league than Blake. You know, Blake, I think he's 29 now and is having trouble staying on the floor, man. Availability, as you well know, as a professional athlete, is everything.
Well, in Tobias' case, he's still young and pretty much been injury-free, knock on wood. His career could be really long. The one good thing about Tobias, he comes here every summer, and he'll be here for a period of time. He'll go over to the gym, to the Gervin gym, and work out for a couple of weeks. Tobias, he's learned from us. He listens, and he knows being around George, being around myself, his dad, who's his agent. All we ever talk about is every year a star brings something new to the table. They come back and they go into the summer and they work on something new. And every year they come back and whether it's working on off the dribble shooting, catch and shoot, getting separation, whatever it may be. And I can vouch for it. Tobias is a very hard worker. He turned down the $80 million because he has a better opportunity going on the free agent market next year, he actually could make he can get a 4-year contract at basically $150 million.
Yeah.
So he has a chance to make $35 to $37 million a year. And so he's betting on himself. I can't be mad
betting
about
on
that.
Himself.
Oh, he's betting on himself, and I really believe it's a good move. Barring injury, I think he'll get the contract that he wants and he deserves. And I'm a happy guy because I love the young man like he's part of my own family.
Yeah, we have to get him on the Derek Gervin As Good As It Gets basketball podcast one of these days, man, and talk a little hoops with gosh, I'm forgetting his name already.
Tobias Harris.
Tobias Harris, absolutely, Tobias Harris. Yeah, I really like his game. He shot the ball. He shot the lights out here in Detroit while he was here. He was shooting 40% from behind the three-point line. Great passer. Stan Van loved to run the offense through him because he always talked about Tobias is going to make a good decision, and that's what you want your guys to do. Make a good decision. Hey, but there's been some other movement, man. You got that's happening in Texas. It looks like Carmelo is going to be headed to Houston. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, as you saw, I wrote a post earlier today. Well, I didn't write a post. It's from a year ago today. I wrote about Carmelo going to Houston. The date was July 25th, 2017. I think it's a good situation for Carmelo. I don't know about Houston now as far as the team because they got rid of Trevor Ariza and Luke Mabute. Now, when you get rid of those guys, you're giving up guys that can play on the offensive end, but they also can play multiple positions on defense. So I think that's going to hurt Houston. I know they're trying to bring in scoring to compete with Golden State, but you still have to be able to get stops on the other end. And I'm a Carmelo fan. I've been a fan of his since college. But sometimes Carmelo has a tendency. I see Carmelo and James Harden have been kind of the same people. That sometimes they play hard on defensive end. Sometimes they don't. Usually it's predicated on how well they're doing offensively. So usually when they don't do so well offensively, they both have a tendency to slack off on the defensive end. So this trade to me is very interesting. They're giving up two very, very important guys, wing position players, for a guy that has a history as a scorer. So, but Mike D'Antoni has been known to be prone to like scores, so we'll see how it works. I'm hoping it works, but we'll see.
Hey Jeff, when you played, were there guys in the league like that that you knew if their offense wasn't going, that they weren't going to do much else the rest of the game? Of the night.
Yes, and sadly, Ricky, that's basketball in general. I just got through, before I walked in the door, I just got through training a young lady. And this young lady is going to be a special ball player. She missed her first shot of the day, and then she gets down on herself. And I'm still trying to understand that kind of thinking. Even for the pros, it doesn't make sense. I'm a person that's big in making adjustments. Instead of getting upset, you fix what went wrong. And I don't understand these guys. You take yourself out the game in the first 2 or 3 minutes of the game because your shot is not falling. And my team, my younger teams, you know, I talk about that a lot. That's telling me that you're mainly just concerned about yourself. You're not concerned about the betterment of the team. I don't care if you go zero. If your team wins the game and you bring some other intangibles to the game, such as playing hard, rebounding, helping your teammates out, a few steals here and there. That's how you play basketball. So I'm sorry that they made everything now that the money is pretty much attached to can you score, can you put the ball in the basket. And that's really not the way the game is meant to be played. The game is meant to be played your team putting the ball in the basket. If I score, that means you score. So really, instead of getting upset, you just fix what went wrong, you make the corrections, and at the end, it'll usually pay off for your team in a big way.
Yeah, I'm totally with you there, man. I am totally with you there. We on the African American Athlete.com radio show the other night, my co-host Mike Robinson and I had Cliff Brown on, who covered the New York Knicks in the 90s with the Pat Riley teams, with Mason and Oakley and Patrick and all those guys, all those hard-nosed players. And he talked about they were not a good shooting team at all, but they were going to outwork you, try to out-rebound you, and punish you on the defensive end and win games that way. But, you know, that was a fun game to watch even back then. But this, the game we see now is really a beautiful game aesthetically, with the spacing of the floor and the shooting, and you know, it's not as physical as back then, but either way, it's a good game. It's a great game, Derek.
It's still exciting. The only difference today, the physicality, and you have guys passing up more layups than ever in history. They've been taught to look to that 3-point line. It used to be the point guard stops at the free throw line. You wait on the two guys on the wing, your James Worthy type players to finish on the wing. Your big man runs straight to the block, the ball side block, and then you've got your trailer. That was how we played in my day. Point guard stops strictly at the free throw line. Look for your wing players. If they're not having it, there's nothing happening on the low post, your trailer is coming. Today, there's pretty much no, the trailers are spotting up at the three, and that might be one of your seven-footers. So the game has changed, but it's still a very exciting game, and I like both ways. I like the change, think it's very exciting.
And a good example of how the game has changed, I happen to be watching NBA TV. You know, they have the throwback game. And they had the Sixers and the Celtics. I think it was game 7 in maybe 81 or 82. It may have been 81 because the 76ers, I think, won in 82. But anyway, the Sixers went up to Boston. Doc had a great game. Tony had a great game. And with time running out, throughout the whole game, it was a half-court game. And even though they had the three-point line, nobody really shot them until the game got out of reach. And, you know, they shot them terribly at that. They were just trying to play catch-up with the Sixers. But that was just a half-court, pound-the-ball-inside game. But, you know, just like you said, either way you look at it, man, it's still a thing of beauty. And something to be appreciated.
Well, you don't want the same. I mean, it gets boring. You see the same thing. I'm glad you got to change with the times. The athletes have changed. They're not as physically strong as they were then. Now they have more skills. They handle the ball. You got guys 260 pounds, 270 pounds, DeMarcus Cousins type guys, dribbling through their legs and going around their back and getting separation. Mm-hmm. And it's funny to me because you're seeing these guys, I'm picturing a Shaq. When Shaq was younger, Shaq had these kind of skills. And that's what a lot of people don't know. They saw Shaq in his latter years. Shaquille, this game is perfect for a young Shaquille O'Neal. When I saw him in high school at Cole High School and then at LSU, if you remember, he also brought the ball down the court, around his back, through his legs, and I thought that was exciting. And now to see a lot of the big guys doing it, I mean, it's man, the game has it's been a revolution. It's revolutionized the game, and it's exciting. It's a change. So instead of beating up guys now we're watching guys get up and down the floor at a very fast pace, and to me it's very exciting. I can't wait for the upcoming season.
And you did, being in San Antonio, you got to see Shaquille play in high school. Could you see the talent and the skills that were going to make him a Hall of Famer back in high school?
This guy was so dominant, man. I think, I don't know, between him and Jabbar, Kareem, Lou Alcindor, I don't know who was the most dominant high school player. But it had to be between those two. They were men playing amongst boys. And when I saw Shaq, I saw him actually at Fort Sam Houston when he was 16 here in San Antonio. And as I kept approaching him and getting closer and closer, he just kept growing. And, man, when I saw the skill set, it was unbelievable. I mean, the guy could run up and down the floor. He could do whatever, he could do everything that was necessary. The only thing he didn't really work on was his jump shot. And I just assumed that's because the guy's hands were so big, it's almost like he was shooting a little grape or something. The ball was like the size of a grape in his hand. But his skill set, I mean, you could see nothing but stardom. So, yeah, there was no question. To me, he was headed to the Hall of Fame as a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Was he playing with you guys, with the pro athletes or something at that time?
No, when I saw him, we just used to – it was like pickup basketball at Fort Sam Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And his dad is a friend with a guy I've been knowing for years, Luke Kimball. So, Luke, you're getting your 2 minutes of fame, my man. Luke Kimball is Shaq's dad's favorite, that's best friends. So Luke was a mm-hmm. trainer at Fort Sam Houston. So I guess Shaq come over there to work out, work on his ball handling, maybe get some weightlifting in. He never played with us when I used to play with the Spurs. He was not around at that time. He was really young,
okay.
But, I mean, looking at him now, I think he might have been ready to give Dave them a run at that time because the guy was very – he was special. He was special.
Yeah, and he demonstrated it in the National Basketball Association. And when I worked in Tennessee as a sports writer, I covered the University of Tennessee. I actually covered Wade Houston, who was at that time the first black coach in the SEC, and his son, Allen Houston, who ended up covering him in Detroit. But he was his point guard on that team, and Shaq was in the league was down at LSU at that time, and so was our good friend Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, a.k.a. Chris Jackson at that time. And, man, they were a sight to behold, man. On that floor, and Shaq was just tremendous, tremendous talent. And so was Chris with his ability to shoot the ball. I mean, he was just so quick and elusive. And they were quite a team. And Allen was a really good player, too, at the University of Tennessee. So, man, I was a treat for me to be able to see those guys playing in the SEC and then see what they were able to go on and do in the National Basketball Association. But, you know, another thing I think we ought to hit on, too, is what the Cleveland Cavaliers are going to do. You know, LeBron is gone. Kevin Love is going to stay. He signed a big deal with them. I think 4 years, $120
million.
I'm like that.
Years. Yes, sir.
You know what? I just don't see him as that kind of player. At this stage of his career, there, hey, more power to him for getting the money, but I don't know how he's going to produce at that level.
I think they're paying Kevin Love more because of the things he went through and he persevered. You know, when he first got there, he was the only other All-Star that they had, and they put a lot of expectations on Kevin Love. And you have to remember, playing with LeBron, everyone has to make the adjustment. There hasn't been a player that's played with him yet that hasn't made the adjustment, that hasn't had to make an adjustment, excuse me. And he had to make that. So I think they're paying him. The guy stuck it through. He stuck it out all the way. They've been talking about trading Kevin Love now for 2 or 3 years. And through all of that, when he was as a healthy player, he's still been a 17-10 guy, Ricky. And people have a tendency to overlook that. When he was in Minnesota, he wasn't on the winning team. But I have to remind people once again, they don't give guys credit because they have big stats on a losing team. But I have to remind you, when he played and was averaging 26 points and 11 and 12 rebounds, it wasn't playing against the Minnesota Timberwolves. It was playing against the other 29 teams.
Right.
So to even be able to put up those statistics, everyone can't do that. You got maybe 10 guys, 5 to 10 guys 5 guys that can average 20 points and 10 rebounds. So they're rewarding him for his consistent.
And think about this too. You putting up those numbers in Minnesota, and the other teams know you're their best player, so you're going to get all the attention in the scouting report. So they know you're coming. So yeah, you're right. You got to give the man credit for that. And I don't have any problem with Kevin Love. I just think my biggest concern with him now is being able to stay on the floor. Availability. He's taken a pounding, and he's played a lot of games. So, you know, hopefully that he will hold up and be able to go out there and produce. But, you know, some people still see Cleveland as a possible playoff team next year.
I'm one of those people. I think they're going to make a few more moves, as you know. And they have some young guys there that have some potential. They still have Nance. They still have Clarkson. I don't know. I doubt that they'll still have Rodney Hood. I think someone else will make an offer for him. But they have the nucleus right now of some guys that can still make the playoffs. I don't know if they'll be. I see them as being a 45-win team. But in the East, we know that's more than enough to get you into the playoffs. And I think Kevin Love, will be the focal point. So I'm looking at him again putting up this year maybe 23, 24 points a game, 11 to 12 rebounds. We already know that. And if they can get production from Nance and guys like that, I still see them as being a number 5 or 6 seed in the East. And I really want Cleveland to do well.
Well, tell me this. Tell me your thoughts on your hometown Detroit Pistons.
Oh, man. Well, let me say this. I'm happy because Van Gundy's gone, and I have to be honest. I'm a big Jeff Van Gundy fan. I'm not a big Stan Van Gundy fan. I think he contributed to part of who Dwight Howard is today. He allowed Howard to get away with so much. It molded him into the person that we see today. And that guy can be a pain in the butt. But for my Pistons, I'm hoping this year I see them doing well. I'm not a big Reggie Jackson fan. I like Ish Smith. I think that's a good combination right now at the point guards. But they have to make another 2 or 3 moves. And I'm hoping the Pistons this year can get up in there and to that 6 or 7 spot and be competitive in the playoffs. But you know they still got to make another 2 or 3 moves before we even talk about them making the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. I'll be cheering for them, but even with LeBron gone and some hope there, and it's going to be a tough season for the Pistons going forward. But yeah, you know, I'm hoping I'm wrong. Hey, but you know what, man? The Motor City. I want to bring in a gentleman who was the pride of the Motor City during his playing days with the Detroit Lions. I had the honor and pleasure of watching this man do his thing at the nose tackle position, one of the best in the NFL. From former All-Pro nose tackle Jerry Ball. And Jerry is joining us tonight. We're going to talk a little bit about the NFL Players Association. And welcome to Jerry. You're on with Derek Gervin and Ricky Hampton on Derek Gervin's As Good As It Gets Basketball Podcast. And JB, although we are a basketball podcast, we talk about all kind of issues of sports. That's why we wanted to bring you in. With training camp opening and some of the controversies going on in the NFL. But welcome to the show, brother.
I appreciate it. How you doing, Derek? And Ricky, I appreciate you guys having me on.
Hey, Rick, let me tell Mr. Ball, sir, I have to tell you this. I am honored. I know exactly who you are. I'm also a Detroit, and when you play with the Lions, I've enjoyed watching you play. I am honored to have you on the show. And I thank you for your time.
I appreciate the invite.
Hey, JB, I always said when during your playing days, you played from 88 to 2003 or 2?
No, 87 to 2000.
87 to 2000.
Correct.
Right. I always said Jerry Ball was ahead of his time because he was talking about player rights and issues and the players coming together and the NFL Players Association being more forceful. I just wish you were in the league today to take on some of the things these guys are talking about and are facing from the NFL owners. What was your philosophy then, and what do you see now, Jerry, from the NFLPA and how the players are dealing with things like the flag issue?
Okay. Well, I tell you, there's multiple ways to approach it. I'm going to try to walk straight down the line and just compare. When I was in the game was a game monopolized by the owners. The NFLPA and the owners truly looked to have colluded on the agreements. There were payments under the table that came out in a federal deposition by Norman Braman, who said he had negotiated $100 million under the table with the NFLPA that they did not tell the player or the court. He ended up getting $100 million. That case went away, but he didn't sue the NFL. His suit was against the NFLPA. And then as players, because, you know, the attorneys and everyone that's trying to become, I guess, in favor, you know, from their representatives and the lawyers that was aware, none of them went back and educated their players of what actually happened. And that was a real disappointment. But when you look at the collective bargaining agreement, there are even things in the language. You know, when you start talking about a union, you have a right to join a union. But in the collective bargaining agreement, our union has the right to actually suspend a player if he does not send in his union payment when I was playing. And it would state that, okay, you have the right to give all the disclosures to join a union on your own free will. But then on the next page, it says that all the NFLPA had to do was submit a letter to the NFL. It's not the competition, the Harry Henderson office that he held. I don't know what, forget the title of that office. Submit that to them, and then the NFL team could actually suspend the player because he didn't pay the union its dues, which at the time was about $100. You know, so in that regard, what people don't really understand that this is truly a partnership. And it's a partnership in organizations. Okay, the NFL as an organization, the owners are pretty consistent. The NFLPA, it appears that it's the same organization, but that's not true because it's cycle players. So the players are at a disadvantage because the information and the history of why we made a decision during my day is being undone in a similar way that deregulation is being done by Trump. They undoing things and going backwards. Now, because of the game and television, there's another component. And television dollars actually is what's guaranteeing football. I know the fans say, oh, no, we paid it. Well, the way that you pay it through television and advertisement. It's not by the gate. People that think that they're paying for that game at the gate are totally on a different planet. You just at a game. But whether or not anybody showed up at that game or not, that game is going on and everybody's going to be paid. That's the owner's money. So the economics of the game has been one thing that the players have never really been able to address because of, I will tell you, poor leadership from the NFLPA. If you look at how the PA and the owners settled the last one, the executive director went and met with the owners by themselves, and then he comes out with an agreement. That sounds like Trump and Putin, okay? Because when he came back out, huh?
Wasn't that Gene Upshaw?
No. I'm talking about the very last one. No, the very last one was DeMaurice. This last one, he actually went in there by himself and came out with an agreement. okay? The guy that's representing us with that CTE, he went and made the NFL owners and the management team by himself, came out and he with it settled. The attorneys that was representing us when we were in that decertification period was Will Gosher. Will Gosher was representing, I think, basketball and baseball, and they had a great deal, but we had a shitty deal. Now, how do we have the same law firm, but we end up with their deal, and they don't? You know how? Because the owners agreed to pay the attorneys their fees up front, which was $32 million. You think they wasn't going to settle that? 1993, Reggie White. They settled that, okay? But the way that the NFLPA did it was so underhanded is that they sent us out a letter, and the letter came to our house like on April 4th or 5th, let's say. But when you open the letter, inside of it, it said like March 20th that you had to respond whether or not you was agreeing on the settlement by the 1st of April. But the postmark on the outside said April 4th. Wow. Those are the type of games. They also did how they pushed it through is that they ran an ad in the USA Today because they say that's a national circulation. Okay, well, what about the player that's out in North Dakota or someone living in the rural areas that's not getting that daily national news? Did he get a chance to vote? Well, when Gene Upshaw came into the Cleveland Browns, I was a player rep and on the executive board, but when he came into the Cleveland Browns, we actually asked him, Gene, how many people voted for the settlement? And this is what he said. Those that voted, voted for it, 51%. We took a head count. With 55 guys in the room, we had 13 guys voting. We had whole teams that didn't vote. No, nowhere near. They didn't get it nowhere near across the league. We had whole teams like the Redskins and the Rams. They literally, whole teams didn't vote. And when I say didn't vote, they stood together and voted no. They didn't vote for it. They voted no. So they pushed those things right through us because we don't have great representation. Now, today, it's no different. You got guys that are former players that's serving us up in a way that they should be taken out in the chair just like Gene Upshaw and get their ass kicked. Because you got men that are dying. No, hear what I'm saying. You got men that are dying that the NFL owe and they know they owe them. Okay, so you take a guy that's got CTE, got dementia and all that. You can physically see this. Why haven't they paid this man? You got players like Mel Ford that was diagnosed with CTE after his death. Why his family hadn't gotten their money? Right. Because in that agreement, it says that any player that died with the diagnosis of CTE after death, the family is entitled to this. They hadn't paid them. So when you start really understanding, the league is not trying to be right. They're only pacifying us. And notice this, too. There's nothing that the player gets during CBA negotiation. Everything the players are getting in between the CBAs because it becomes a public relations deal. It's not because they're at the table bargaining in good faith. CTE is a public relations deal. You know, other than that, if that doctor don't come out with the story and they don't do that movie, you think the NFL is going to be doing this? They already had the information. They wasn't going to do it. It's public relations.
Jerry, I think one of the problems, man, as I mentioned in our introduction, you were always an outspoken player and a leader in the locker room and aware of issues. But, you know, Jerry, there's a lot of guys that were just happy to be in the NFL, and I'm sure it's a lot of that today that just happy to be up there.
Hey, look, Rick, I truly understand. Look, we wasn't making nowhere near the money. I got a young kid that was raised in my house named DJ Hagen, was with the Lions. And it's so political that, you know, him, I wouldn't even let him tell the Lions that he and I had that type of relationship because I didn't want them to take out anything on him because of me. Okay? I mean, literally. It's that tit for tat, okay? But here's the thing. You take a guy like DJ. DJ signed with Jacksonville 3 years, $20 million to be a third down DB, not even a starter. Well, hell, it would be tough for me to say I'm not going to go get that,
right.
You know, because we do need those resources in the community. But at some point, collectively, as players, we have to get control of our union. And until we get control of that union, we're going to always be divided like this. We're going to always have players that's willing to sacrifice, like Howie Longson or Malcolm Jenkins or Kaepernick, guys that will stick their neck out for the greater good of all. But then you got guys that are, hey, I'm going to get my money and go. Well, that's cool. That's cool. But at the end of the day, all of us are going to be retired players. And when these ailments that we're getting, regardless of what you were paid, I was just told I got to have a knee replacement. I went to the doctor today. He's saying, well, as old as you are, you know, we want to try to see if we can't wait till you're 60. Okay, I'm 53. But he's telling me, okay, it's not a question if I have to have it. So when I'm 60, where am I going to be in my health? You know what I mean? And depending on what the league is doing, you know, there's no insurance for me. They're not doing anything that's going to compensate for that. You know, but where did it come from? You know?
No
so,
doubt. And in fact, the NFL, Jerry Ball was such a dominant player that they would cut block him. They double team him, send a guy high, send a guy to his knee. They finally... They called the Jerry Ball rule. They had to outlaw that rule after you got hurt, Jerry. So,
well, Rick, you know, even
on this.
Well, can I make one comment about that?
Yeah, yeah.
That particular incident is just a classic example. Everywhere in football where football is played, that type of block is illegal no matter who do it. A receiver on the defensive end, on the DB, on the linebacker, on the line, off the line, it don't matter. A defensive player on an offensive player, that's an illegal block. But the league said when that shit happened to me that it was legal because of tort and liability. They knew I understood tort and liability. So they went in there real quick and said that the block was legal to cut off me being able to go after damages. Is that, that's how deep this is. They lawyered up, bro. Straight up.
Wow.
Think about that. You know?
Wow.
And that block is illegal, has always been legal. It's been taught as being illegal from Little League all the way forward. But because it happened to me and the way that it happened, they say, well, that was a legal block for the back to block a guy on the line. Well, how is that when you got other blocking schemes that don't allow that to happen? You know, so
it's
business. Bottom line, they taking the business approach. You know, we have an emotional tie to the game because you got to put some heart in it to go out there and battle these men face to face. You know, you're not thinking about how much money you're making on the field when that guy punching you in your mouth. You know? So, you know, there's a part of business and there's a part of, you know, the game itself. And the players play more with the game in mind, but the owners in the way that they deal us, they make us have to be business. Because they counting on us not to be business. But then the fans get and they upset because they hear a player talking about the business side, but he was forced into that. You know, Calvin Johnson, you know, Barry Sanders.
Right.
That wasn't just football decisions. Those were business decisions.
Hey, Rick, can I miss the ball?
Yep.
I have a quick question
sir.
For you. I wanted to cover this. I wanted to ask you what's going on right now. Okay, I know it's going to be hard, very hard to repair the relationship between the players and the owners. But But at this time right now, within the last few days, you've had a couple owners come out, and they've spoken outwardly about President Trump. Well, that's the first time I called him president, so I'm sorry. I take that back. But Donald Trump talking about now you got players, now you got owners that are getting upset because they feel he's spending too much time talking about the kneeling and all that stuff and the players standing in the locker room. Is there any chance in the near future that this relationship could be repaired at all between the owners and the players?
Well, they can, first of all, it's a partnership, but here's the deal. Our biggest issue before we even start dealing with the owners is going to be with the NFLPA. The NFLPA retired players and active players are finally getting together. You would be surprised to know that our NFLPA union don't allow active and retired players to even meet together. Even when we go to our convention, they don't even let us sit together. We don't even be in the same room together because they don't want us to tell them. But we got former players in there that are orchestrating this because that's the way that they're able to manipulate the body. There's documents floating around right now where at the convention it was so contentious, and these guys are trying to stop guys from getting each other's information. They used to give us out a directory with every player's name, retired or active, so that we could talk to players and network. They don't even – they. Right now, they're debating on whether or not they should do that. And players are asking for it. And we're like, well, you're our union. How are you holding something from us? What union would hold this union roster from a member? No union.
No union. Yeah.
But
that's crazy.
No union. Okay? And the other thing with it is that they're about to get hit with, and I really don't want to say it, but it's going to be a class action lawsuit that's going to break this shit wide open. Because the audit that's going to show when the NFLPA is questioned is going to start undoing all of these little side deals, all of this little hidden payment. You look at the guy, D. Maurice Smith. He's a labor lawyer, but his money comes directly from the licensing money. How is he making $4.5 million from licensing? He ain't doing nothing. But what they did, they loaded everybody up on the player side where the player's revenue come in, but they're not doing no labor work.
Hey,
you know, it's
hey,
all
Jerry,
kind of things.
Weren't you the first, I didn't mean to cut you off, but weren't you the first NFL player to have your own licensing with the National Football League?
I was the first and only player to have 100% ownership of a license where I was a partner with the owner. That's the other thing they couldn't handle. Is that, yeah, I'm sitting on there as a player and I'm the player rep, but I'm over here and I got licensed material and I'm paying royalty to the NFL and I'm making stuff for the owners and I'm making stuff for the league. The reason why ProLine exists and don't allow you no one to wear anything other than NFL merchandise is because of me. Because I was making jackets for like Sterling Sharp, and when he had his neck hurt, he was wearing my stuff on the sideline, and the other licensed people was like, no, that's not fair. He's a player. He gets a chance to get access to him, and I'm quarterback club, line, haters club, all that. I got all the players involved, and the NFL changed that and said, no, you can only wear our stuff on the sideline. But in all that, you know, the logos is what the league try to protect as his image. But the people, like you take a Jerry Jones, who's one of the largest shareholders in Papa John's, who's also standing with Trump and gave him $1 million for his inauguration, who just came out and said his players are going to have to stand. Who is he placating to?
Right.
Is he right. trying to deal with his players, or he's trying to play his politics, you know? What's going to bite Jerry Jones is the simple fact of this. Donald Trump will chew him up and spit him out when he's done with it.
Yep.
And he's going to have to come back and face his players. But if you remember anything, Jerry Jones' ass was kneeling with his players. But now you're going to make them stand? But your ass was kneeling with them. Hypocrite.
But
you know, when you
Here's the predicament for me, and both of you guys, Derek, you played in the National Basketball Association. Jerry, you play in the NFL. That's a small window of time to earn those dollars. I mean, where do you put your conscience as a man, and where you put your ability to provide for your family? Derek, you go, and then Jerry, you follow.
Okay.
Well, that depends on the individual, Rick. You have some people that's not worried about losing dollars, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons I salute Colin Kaepernick. Some of these guys, the other day from the Tennessee Titans, the player that came out, those guys they're not worried about losing dollars, because at the end of the day, they're doing something good for everyone involved in the game. And sometimes someone has to have a voice. If you don't have a voice, how can change ever come about? I appreciate all the guys that are standing up. And what bothers me is still we keep going back and forward, and we keep talking about the same subject. Not one player that I've seen has protested the flag. We're protesting racial injustice. Now you can have the other people out there that want to continue to overlook the issues. We all know what the issues are, so we must continue to bond together and do not give in to these people that are acting like they don't know what we're talking about. We're talking about racial injustice today, racial injustice tomorrow. We want changes, and we have to be able as a group. There's power in numbers. That's why Ball was a threat. You were a threat to those guys with the merchandise and all that because you have brains.
No doubt about that.
A black man with brains that knows how to get things done. That's why Kaepernick is a threat. So we have to just bond together. That's it.
Yeah, and you just hit on something in referring to Jerry. Jerry, then I'm going to get you in on this, because when Jerry was playing, you know, people would say he's the clubhouse lawyer. He's a bad influence. And JB, if you wasn't the dominant player that you were, it ain't no doubt in my mind they'd have got you out of that league long before your 12, 14-year career ended.
Man, I was being blackballed. Colin Kaepernick is facing, I was that by myself. And the only reason, only way that I stuck is Al Davis. Al Davis gave me a job when nobody else was signing. And I had just left Belichick, who had just traded for me. The Browns was trying to sign me back, okay? But I could see it was a blackball situation, but here's the deal. But on every team that I was on, talk to the players. The one thing they knew, I ain't going to let no bullshit fly. You know, coach comes in. And you know, I remember when Cleveland coach comes in and he say, well, guys, one of your teammates have come to me and telling me that everybody isn't, you know, pulling their weight. And after he was done, any questions, I raised my hand. I'm like, yeah, coach. I said, now, coach, you know, you just came in a room with all these men and you just drew a line between man to man, because now all we want to know is who the hell is this? I said, do you understand that you just put a hole in your team? And I told him in front of everybody. Yeah. And everybody's shaking their head like, yeah, like what player thinks he can go to the coach and the coach can come to the team? Okay, that ain't a teammate. We men. You got an issue, you come man to man. You know? So in that regard, you know, it's all kind of things that have, you know, but players also are lazy. They ain't, you know, ain't just them. The players are lazy. They don't want to read the documents when they're given to. They don't go to the meetings and stuff. And then at the end of the day, they show up when they think there's a check involved. But going back to when you talk about Kaepernick, but think back to Bill Russell, Jim Brown, Muhammad Ali, and them guys. When them guys had to stand, when it wasn't about the money, it's about our people. The very same thing we're saying now.
Right.
The very same things. You know, now those dollars back then seemed the same as they are now. Big money, how you going to make this money? Let me tell you something. How did the owners make it? That's more than one way to make money. If it's about money. Yeah. Now, because guys have a short window in this period, yeah, you want to be intelligent and you want to be smart and you want to try to take advantage of the opportunity. But it's also at the same time, you know, like in Decent Proposal, God come off your $1 million sleep with your wife. Do you break your covenant?
Yeah.
Huh? So yeah. Is it about money or is it about your covenant? Is it about money
right.
or is it about your people? Now, here's what I say about people that talk that nonsense about standing for the flag. The only people could ever say something to me about that is somebody that's at their house on Thanksgiving, on any game, when that anthem comes on, at their house they stand up. If they ain't standing up at their house, they ain't no more patriot than anything. Because if it means something in the public, it should mean the same in private. Come on. Are we not saying truth?
Absolutely.
All right,
absolutely.
So, but then you have a person that's sitting on their ass at home, want to talk about a player, and he not standing, but you feel that flag is all that you stand for. You make sure you do your part.
Don't forget the concession stands.
Oh, come on. The concession stands, all that. I mean, but here's the other thing, and it's two other points, that, and it's more general than football. You have people that want to decide your freedom. Now, if they choose to protest, it's fair. But they want to say, oh, you should do that somewhere else, not at a football game. What? How do you pick and choose? It's okay over here, not over here. You know, that's hypocrites, and that's also those same people that want to walk around and act like they friends not being racist, that sit up there and be a part of the racial joke and then turn around when they called out on it and say, I don't know what you're talking about. I've never seen any of that.
Right.
No, you've never seen any of it until we started filming that ass on them cameras with them phones. Now you see it all the time. Then I had a guy that I'm debating one time. He say, he puts on and he say, you wasn't a slave and I wasn't a slave owner. Why do we have to keep talking about it? I say, you're right. That's one fact about it. I said, but we'll stop talking about it when you give up your inheritance.
Come
you
on,
don't
hear that.
Shit, he say.
Hey, Jerry,
all right. Go ahead.
You came in the league in '87. Was the strike year '88?
It was '87. My rookie year, I was striking and hadn't made a dollar. Feel that?
You walk the picket line.
I'm on the picket line. I'm watching the scabs and everybody break the line. I ain't made one dime.
Wow.
Real talk. You know? So, like I say, man, you know, there's a lot of ways to skin it, but every man, like Derek said, has to make a decision on what's important to him, what his values are, what's his sensibilities. You know, what's his discipline? Is this his only chance to get ahead? You know what I mean? Some guys have truly vested everything they have in ball. They didn't really work on personal development and learning how to do some other skill set or doing something in the off season because ball is their primary idea of what I want to be. You know, but in NFL, not for long. NBA, not for long. Eventually, you're going to have to be Jerry again. You know,
right.
Not Jerry Ball, Jerry.
Right. That's good stuff, man. Hey, how do you see all this playing out, JB, as we go forward with the NFLPA and the NFL? Are they going to be able to come to some kind of working agreement? Go ahead.
I don't think this year is going to be smooth at all. Because it's just too much in the air. But then, here's the other thing. You know, that collective bargaining agreement was in 2020.
Yeah.
All right? And the NFL owners have already been circulating the idea of doing an extension before 2020 come. Now, the ignorance with the players is that they're focused on the CBA as it currently sits in its structure. But if they were paying attention, notice how many international games are being played by the NFL, and understand that those are TV markets. Those are different advertisers, and that's a different revenue stream. Bring that money into the account, too. If you don't bring that money into the account, we're going to be screwed out completely for that, until that second time at the wheel to try to correct what we should be correcting before they even get it. That international market is their growth. And if they're not sitting there trying to cut bread with the players, then you already know it's a sham. And they're not talking to the players about the international markets. They keep us in the box, but I promise you they're talking to DeMaurice. I promise you they're showing them the demographics. You look at Mexico City, that's 10 million people.
Yeah.
The Raiders are the two biggest team in Mexico City. Any one of them show up is sold out.
You do a lot of international business, and you're on the go all the time. Is there any way that you will ever get back involved with the NFLPA, I mean, on a daily basis? Maybe DeMaurice takes a leave or resigns, you go for that job?
Honestly, I'm going to be real with you. The NFLPA should be controlled by the players. The NFL has a system that the owners get to make decisions, and then they come back and talk to the NFLPA. But our union is totally out the loop. So if I had something that I was trying to actually put in for the players, who you think I'm going to go to first? I'm going to the owners. Let me tell you why I'm going to go to the owners, because they're more vulnerable right now than they've ever been. And they ask looking for solutions. And I could bring the same solution to the NFLPA, but it's going to get chopped down and diluted and bullshit. Whereas I go over here to the owner and I'll tell, listen, my name has already been brought to the day that if you want to get to pro, you need to talk to Jerry Ball, because the Dow brought Singletary, Porsche, and a group of other players together to try to get some type of audience and understanding. You know, and my name was brought up in that meeting that they need to bring me to the table. But I'm not coming to the table kissing their ass. I can tell you that. I don't need them. I ain't asking them for nothing either. But if they want a solution, I give them some very straightforward things that's good for both and make it a real partnership. But the first thing we're going to do, we're going to audit shit. Let's count the money. Okay? Let me tell you why, Rick. Because when I had the license, all right, and I'm an NFL, let me make sure you understand what licenses I had. I had NFL, Major League Baseball, Negro League, Hasbro, Disney, Warner Brothers. I did G.I. Joe, Marvel Comics. I had all the collegiate stuff, Georgetown, Miami, all of it. And I'm in 600 JCPenney's. And God's my witness on Judgment Day. You know who placed that call for me to go to JCPenney's? Jerry Jones. Al Davis called Jerry Jones, told Jerry Jones set me up with JCPenney. JCPenney set me in the room and asked me how big I wanted to be. Literally. We go play the Giants. Al Davis set the meeting for me to meet with the CEO of Liz Claiborne and Jim Marine and with the people at Nostrils. Now, I'm playing ball, but I'm doing business at the same time. You know, but in that period of time, the Sporting Goods Manufacturing Association, which is still the organization that tracks all sales, all sporting goods through all stores, all licenses, all leagues, all brands, the Sporting Goods Manufacturing had the revenue for the NFL starter jackets as being $4 billion. But when we're negotiating that CBA, the NFL in their total revenue for licensing was 1.1. Now think about that. On one hand, you got $4 billion of NFL merchandise being sold, but when you come back over here to count it with us, it's only $1.1 billion of total sales. Whereas they're showing $4 billion of total sales just on the starter jackets. Think about that. All right? So when you talk about a miscount, it ain't no miscount. It's a deliberate count. Who's checking the checker? And get somebody to check him. Because here's the one thing. When you're dealing with billionaires and he could tell you, hey, look, man, I'm going to slide you $2 million. Okay? You know? Don't worry about it. We'll finish up the count. You know, you're going to find somebody going to take that. You know, because normally they're going to be an accountant, probably making $100,000.
Right.
Then sitting there to do an audit. Okay? So you come to him with $2 million, he ain't going to consider it. It ain't illegal. Now, he ain't got no ethics, but it ain't illegal.
Mr. Ball.
Yes, sir.
Can I do you a favor? Because we got to get off this air. Can I? And I'm dead sincere. Can we get you back on this show again, sir?
Man, anytime. Anytime,
man. I think I'm learning. You know, I love the NBA, the NFL game, and I've been an NBA player. But your insight on this players' association and its owners is something that we got to piggyback off of on another day, and hopefully we can get you back on soon.
Right. Let me say this one thing for all the youngsters that's listening. The NFL has already understood last year that the people that are going to vote on the CBA were juniors in high school. Okay? So they pay attention to the cycle. We got to get this message down to the middle school and to the parents so the kids come in understanding the business. That's where we got to go. Not just work on those olders. We got to really bring it down to the second, third tier below. But that's all I want to say. But I appreciate you guys having me on.
Man, Jerry, we appreciate you, brother. I mean, especially giving us this information, man, because, you know, a lot of people, they just see them run out there on Sundays, but there's a lot more to it than what you see on Sundays. Your perspective on the business. As I told you, when during your playing days, I mean, you were ahead of the times, and you always wanted. What I see what the NBA players have with their union is the stuff you were talking about with the NFL union 15, 20 years ago. And that's
right.
How far the NFL union is behind.
No question. And then you know what, Rick? I'm going to say this, and this is going to be in the book. One day, I'm up in Chuck Smith's office. I'm meeting with him a day after the game. And the balance sheet of the games and the receipts are sitting on his desk. And it's on the ledger. You know, it's a spreadsheet. They hadn't got to the computer and doing all that by now at this time. Everybody was still putting it on ledger. But what he didn't understand is that I could read a ledger upside down. I used to do the ledger for my grandfather's business. So they're taking $1 million in at the game, all right? And I say, Chuck, man, look, why is the game being blacked out in Detroit, man? I said, we got 10,000, 11,000 seats empty. Why don't we give those seats to those kids down there, and then the whole city can see the game? Chuck Smith says this, we're not trying to be everything to everybody. That's the general manager of the Detroit Lions made that statement. And this is going to be in the book, Rick, this statement here alone. I was negotiating the first time that I was holding out, and I told Chuck, hey, I deserve to be the highest paid defensive lineman on the team. Eric Williams was holding out. Chuck been getting so frustrated with me because I'm sitting there talking to him, and I'm talking facts. Chuck tells me, he say, what, you think I'm going to pay white-ass Eric Williams more money than you? Now, think about that. Here's an Anglo-Saxon white male telling an African-American black Negro young man that he calls another man by color, not his name,
right?
By color. The Lions seem color in all their decisions. All the star Negro players held out, none of the Anglo. Check that one out. Go back in records. Spielman ever held out?
Nope.
Nope.
Well, we do have to go.
I'm gonna let you go. But I just want to have you understand. Yeah. Ain't no love lost with me. I love them. Okay, but I'm gonna tell the truth.
That's why you on here.
We sure appreciate you, JB.
All good, bro.
One other thing, Mr. Ball, I thought some prayers out for you, Father. We know he's ailing, and as I told you the other day, man, the greatest thing you can do is make your parents proud. You have certainly done that with your accomplishments, not only as an athlete,
man, I appreciate
but as
that.
A husband and father and a businessman. So we're keeping Mr. Ball in prayer.
I appreciate it. I'm definitely
yes,
his senior. I'm junior.
Yes.
If you like, if you think I'm something, you need to see him.
I bet, man. Well, thank
all
you,
right, brother. All right, y'all have a good night.
You too. All right. Thank you. We'll talk again.
Well, Derek, man, we got to get out of here. I really enjoyed talking with Jerry. I knew that he would come strong and give us some information on the NFL Players Association and their battle with the NFL. I wish he was in the league now because he would really have a lot to say regarding the flag issue. And it's good that we got away from basketball, too. As much as we love basketball, I know you want your podcast to be about a lot of other stuff beyond the world of basketball.
I thought today's show was fantastic. I'm too old to be doing cartwheels, but I'm doing them in my head.
I hear you, man. Well, hey, we're gonna get together real soon and put together another show on Derek Gervin's As Good as It Gets basketball podcast. So we'll talk soon, brother.
All right, have a good night, and thank all the people that tuned in tonight. And thank you. Sorry we went a little over, but it was all worth it.
Yeah, and. We'll have this show posted on the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com Facebook page and website by the end of tomorrow. So people will be able to go back and check it out then. Well, all right, man. Be good, Derek.
Thank you. Have a good night, Rick. Thank you.
All right.